I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, this sounds like some tinfoil hat stuff, but it's not, and we have the receipts to prove it. How taxpayers are paying for a network of ideological extremists to indoctrinate and even disappear your children. Plus, our Undivided whistleblower gets mere seconds to share her story in Olympia. And the Seattle Times takes the side of drug abusers over at-risk youth. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. And while you're there, make sure to shop our merch store for some Undivided swag so you can tell everyone around you that you have more common sense than they do. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We've been talking a lot this week about indoctrination of children. We're going to have some stories on that on the show today. But there was this response I got on social media, and I get a lot of dumb responses on. So I get a lot of great ones, too, from you guys, of course. But I get a lot of trolls on social media. But this one stuck out to me because it's a sentiment I hear not too often when I talk about the boys and girls sports issue or the story we had this week on, you know, a school district and a taxpayer-funded law firm colluding to help a 16-year-old girl flee from home because she wants to be a boy. This person said, really? All that's going on in the world and you have nothing better to do than to talk about this? And it reminded me of like Bob Ferguson saying, I'm obsessed with these issues. I responded to this lady, man, whoever, random person, and I said, absolutely, I have nothing better to do. I said, I can't think of one thing that is more important than trying to stand up for families and for kids when the state is using taxpayer resources to indoctrinate them, to trans them, and to essentially legally kidnap them. I really cannot think of a single thing that would be a better use of my time and my platforms than to talk about that. And I know many of you agree. And it's not just down to, I always say the boys and girls sports, you know, it's the principle of the matter, and it's a barometer for sanity and for common sense. And if you can sit here and tell me that boys should participate in girls, why should I trust you on any other thing? So that is really a litmus test issue. But it is more profound than that. When we get into all the indoctrination happening of these kids, they're trying to indoctrinate kids so they can control them, so they control their minds and ideology and politics and all of these things, and so that they can stay in power down the road. It really is a substantial issue. And I know so many of you feel that way. That's why I'm hoping that you will be with us in Olympia on February 3rd, next week, Tuesday, to rally for parents, to rally for girls, to rally for common sense. We've already told you there's going to be this rally happening for the two Let's Go Washington initiatives, which the Democrats refuse to give hearings to. So we're going to do that at 2:30 p.m. There are going to be some really important voices, like some of these girls who are impacted, but also Jamie Reed, a whistleblower on radical gender ideology and medical interventions, and firecracker Tish Hyman is going to be there, the black lesbian who threw a fit because there was a dude in her dressing room down in California. Well, she's now become such a great voice on these issues. She's going to join us on the steps of the Washington State Capitol. So we're going to have so many voices, but something important is happening afterwards as well. So there is going to be a listening session that is held on both of these initiatives in a hearing room at the Capitol. So remember, Democrats wouldn't give these initiatives a hearing. So Republicans said, okay, well, we'll do an informal hearing. We'll use one of the official hearing rooms. We'll try to get it broadcast on TVW. And if Democrats don't want to listen to these girls and these parents and these experts on why parental rights and why this no boys and girls space thing is so important, we'll listen to them. So I think that is so cool. So at 4 p.m., we're going to have the rally at 2:30. And then at 4 p.m., everyone's going to go into this informal hearing. And the lawmakers who actually care to be there are going to be there to listen to the girls, are going to be there to listen to doctors, are going to be there to listen to parents. So it's going to be a busy day in Olympia next Tuesday. And I want to just remind you why it is so important that we tackle this issue and that we push for change. And what I'll say, too, is that we steamroll everyone who gets in our way. Either get on board or you're going to be left behind. And I am so sick of hearing from people who are too cowardly to step forward and say something. There's just no excuse anymore for adults. And I don't care what your position is in life out there. There are ways that each and every one of us can try to bring an end to this insanity. And I was talking to someone on the phone the other day. I won't give it away because, you know, it's a private conversation. they're like, oh, you know, I wish I could say something. It's just, I got this, you know, job and all this stuff. And I'm kind of know somebody who's at this school. And I'm like, honestly, I just don't care to hear that anymore. You got teenage girls who can step up and stand up for themselves. You got the state disappearing children because their parents won't agree that they should be medically transitioned. This is a turning point. It's a time for choosing, as Ronald Reagan would say. And it's time to put all this to bed now. So the description of today's show, I'm sure some people will see it and think, Brandy, you have gone so tinfoil hat kooky off the deep end. Maybe, but I don't think so. Because of the description of the show, I said taxpayers are paying for a network of ideological extremists to indoctrinate and disappear children. And I want to talk about what I mean by that, obviously. So we had the exclusive this week about a young girl named Eleanor and this whole ring of players that were involved in trying to help her leave home. She's now been missing for 2 months. You know, we talked about the Puyallup School District's involvement in this, keeping secrets from parents, giving Eleanor information on gender clinics that she could go to during the day. We talked about Team Child, and this is an outside law firm that the school district helped connect this child to so she could unsuccessfully petition for guardianship with a non-binary homeless outreach advocate in Olympia who she met on the streets. And then the judge that temporarily granted it is this Black queer woman who was written about in Seattle's Gay News. I mean, it is insane. This whole ecosystem that sought to cut parents out and help Eleanor become Elliot and run away from home. Now a 16-year-old missing on the street somewhere, parents haven't seen her in 2 months. Now that all would be bad enough, right? That all would be bad enough. But when you start to see how all the pieces fit together and how all the pieces connect back to one party rule and Democrat control in Olympia, and how you are paying for this. I am paying for this. Nicole is paying for this. You are paying for this to happen. So what a tangled web we weave. Remember the group WA Families for Freedom? So that's the organization that sprung up to oppose the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. They want boys playing against girls, and they want to cut parents out of what's happening in public schools. And I hadn't noticed this at first because this organization wasn't really on my radar. But then we did the Eleanor story and we talked about Team Child, which is this law firm entity that exists to help children, essentially, I guess, break free from their horrible parents. Well, we noticed after doing that story, Team Child is also one of the endorsers of WA Families for Freedom, along with Washington Youth Alliance, the Washington Education Association, the Teachers Union, Gender Justice League, and the ACLU. And I thought, of course they are. And why wouldn't they be? Here's this law firm that specializes in helping these at-risk youth that the schools send to them, unbeknownst to parents. And this law firm, as they did with Eleanor, will help try to separate children from parents over the issue of radical gender ideology. So, of course, this law firm is going to be a supporter of WA Families for Freedom, the effort to make sure parents don't have any rights in education. But it gets any deeper than that. Can you show that graphic one more time, Nicole? So, again, just remember some of these names. Team Child, Gender Justice League, Washington Education Association, opposing the people's initiatives while getting taxpayer funds. According to state budgets, I'm just looking at 2025 here. Here's how much taxpayer money was given to some of these entities to turn around, spread lies about the initiatives, disappear kids from their parents, indoctrinate kids in our public schools. Just in 2025, Team Child got $700,000 from taxpayers in the state of Washington. And we know what kind of work they do. We know what they did with Eleanor. Your money's paying for it. Gender Justice League got $195,000 from the state of Washington to turn around and try to make sure parents don't have any rights in education and to try to make sure boys play against girls and that girls are forced into uncomfortable situations. And then, of course, we already know the Washington Education Association gets millions of dollars from the state of Washington and from Democrats. And they turn around in 2025, $3.4 million alone in 2025 that they did what with? that they funneled back into Democratic political candidates and that they're using now to oppose the initiatives. So as horrified as we all are with these stories, we're paying for it. We're paying for schools to hand out information to kids about gender clinics they can run away to during the day. We're paying for this law firm to show up in court with no evidence of abuse whatsoever and to help a child petition to be removed from her parents' custody and placed successfully for a couple months with a non-binary homeless outreach person who gives drug kits to people on the street. We're paying for them to force girls to play against boys, for them to force girls to share locker rooms with boys. And nothing will change until we don't have one party power anymore. They get away with this stuff. And it's all just this sick web. It's this disgusting, dangerous web. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. The WEA wants control. They give it to the state. The state returns that with money to them. They use that money like a sick cycle to carry out their radical ideology. And Eleanor's case is, I think, the first time where we're able to show that with receipts and the whole cycle of money and what the result is. With all that money and the cycle of money, what's the result in this one case? It's a 16-year-old living on the street somewhere. Don't know if she's alive or dead. That's what all this money is going to. What kind of outcome is that? Also, she could call herself Elliot? Sick, sick stuff. And I have a follow-up on this I want to share with you today because this Eleanor story has really taken off nationally. I was quite perturbed earlier this week, as you know, that the Puyallup School District has refused to answer our questions on this. They wouldn't even respond to our email about two boys on the girls' wrestling team and girls complaining about it and feeling uncomfortable. And then they sent us, as you know, I just got to read it one more time, this pretty condescending, honestly, response in response to our detailed questions about Eleanor's case. As a matter of district practice, we do not participate in interviews or commentary-style programs, including podcasts or radio-style shows. Accordingly, the district will not be providing comment in response to your request. We'll enter our friend Andy Ngo. Remember Andy Ngo? So Andy Ngo wrote a book on Antifa. He's with the Post-Millennial. He also has his own Substack, No Comment, and he was at the Antifa Roundtable with me. He covers far-left extremism, basically. And Andy was sharing my story, and he goes, hey, forward me the email you sent to the school district. He's like, let's see if I can get a response. So Andy just takes our questions, basically, and puts them to the same woman who rejected us, and they get back to Andy immediately. They were like, hey, Andy, we'll get answers to these questions. And so Andy just forwarded me the answers they sent him, which I would also say, and I'll read them momentarily, how is Andy any different than me? And inarguably, it would make more sense for them to respond to me, someone who does local journalistic content and who's working directly with the parents and the students to ask the school district these questions, than it would for them to respond to Andy Ngo, who's a national commentary writer. And he does commentary too. So their argument that they can't respond to me because I do commentary doesn't really hold water. It seems like they just made that rule up and hoped nobody would check it and didn't know that I was the one who told Andy, or Andy offered, to send our questions to them. So we sent them a blistering email this morning. And I basically said, this is interesting, isn't it? I said, we're still working actively on stories regarding your school district, and we would anticipate, based on your response to Andy Ngo, that we would have a little more cooperation from you moving forward as a public entity. But regardless, thank you, Andy Ngo, for getting some of these responses to us. So again, he basically just reworded our questions and sent them directly over. The questions included, what procedures govern parental notification when school officials believe a student may be at risk of self-harm or suicidal behavior? How does the district determine when a student should be referred to Team Child, which is the law firm? What qualifications or expertise do school staff possess that would enable them to evaluate alleged abuse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So I want to read a couple of these responses that the school gave him. And look, they say in here, because these matters involve students, the district is legally bound to protect privacy and cannot discuss or share information regarding any individual student or family. We can share general information. And that would have been fine with me. I didn't expect them to give me information on a child. No, of course not. But they could have given us this exact same response that they gave to Andy Ngo. So, for instance, they said schools may share information about community-based resources when families need support. Team Child is one of many community partners. Sharing a resource does not authorize services, replace parental involvement, or direct outside care. Yes, it did. Those are just lies. So when you said when families need support, This is just about Eleanor. You gave Eleanor. You connected Eleanor to Team Child without telling the family. So how are you saying it doesn't replace parental involvement? You didn't tell the family, and the family didn't know until they were brought to court. And then they said school staff does not determine custody or abuse or housing placement of students. Those decisions belong to courts and child welfare agencies. When subpoenaed, the district is obligated to provide objective, factual information. The school district sent a counselor there to say that it wasn't a suitable home environment for Eleanor. When the state of Washington, I've reviewed 1,000 court documents on this, they found no evidence of abuse in the home whatsoever. Wasn't credible. And that's eventually why this whole thing was terminated and the case ended. And so what evidence did a teacher have to go there and say, or a counselor, this is a bad home environment? You have no expertise in that area. You've never even been to their home. You know nothing. And also said, when a student is reported missing or run away, law enforcement and child welfare agencies become the lead authorities, and the district and its schools follow legal guidance on student and family confidentiality. So that was in response to the question about, did school officials at any time know the whereabouts or safety status of a student who had run away? And if so, was that information withheld from the child's parents? So they say, oh, this goes to law enforcement. Their counselor fielded calls from Eleanor's mother in tears. Where's my child? My child hasn't returned home yet. They've been gone for a month. She won't be coming back to school. And the counselor would console the mother on the phone. So sorry you're going through this. Oh, well, that counselor knew that she was going to be in a court of law not long after that, because Eleanor was petitioning for a guardianship change. And she didn't say any of that to the mother. Mom didn't know if her child was dead or alive. So this is all nonsense from the school, and not a surprise. Quite interesting, though, that they had no problem responding to Andy, no. But when it comes to me, absolutely cannot tell her anything, as if that ever makes the situation better. Doing this job for a long time, I promise you, as a public entity, that no comment always makes things worse. And it drags a story on for longer. So if that's the route that you choose to take, scorched earth is the route we shall go. A reminder again, next Tuesday, 2:30 p.m. on the steps of the Washington State Capitol, we will be there. Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington, Jamie Reed, whistleblower on radical gender ideology, and Tish Hyman, who's become such an important voice for protecting girls' space, is all going to be there along with female athletes and parents who are going to share their stories. And then we will go right into an informal hearing held by Republican state lawmakers so some of these individuals can share their information and their stories on the record. So a lot going on next Tuesday. All right, speaking of indoctrination, let's just stay on this theme. This is wild. Absolutely wild. So there is something utilized by school districts called RTI. It's response to intervention. And so essentially what this aims to do, it's sort of a thought process that it aims to identify kids who are struggling in school, use targeted teaching to help them catch up. And they say an important part of it is measuring progress and providing more support to kids who need it. So it's this idea, and on its face, that sounds great, right? Like, hey, RTI response to intervention. Let's utilize this in schools and say, let's say you've got a kid who's fallen behind in reading or math. Okay, we've targeted that. We know, based on grades and teachers know, this kid's falling behind. Let's rapid response to intervention, and let's get them caught back up. So some schools in Washington State utilize this by putting aside a certain period of time during the day when kids can kind of choose, like let's say you're falling behind in math. Then you have this time set aside during the day where kids who feel like they need a little extra help in math have this half hour sort of period. It's not a formal class, but it's almost like a little time to tutor during school. Or if you're behind in another subject or whatever it is, and then other kids can use that. It's like an advisory period, so to speak. So this at Cougar Mountain, is this Cougar Mountain Middle School? Cougar Mountain Middle School. Every day, kids there have an opportunity to get assistance via RTI in their schedule. So it's fourth period, advisory / RTI, 10 a.m. to 10:30. Okay, so they can decide to take advantage of that period of time to get caught up. All right, so a mom at Cougar Mountain Middle School in the Bethel School District in Graham notices this RTI class on her son's schedule. Now, the son claims he didn't enroll in this specific, because there's a bunch of different RTI opportunities during that half hour period of time. This one's quite specific. And the son tells his mom, I didn't enroll in this. They just put me in this. Here's the title of it. RTI Pride Time. LGBTQIA plus and friends. And in parentheses, it says math. Are you confused? Yes, I am too. So the instructor is Chad Barker, room 701, Friday, January 30th. Session details. Pride Club, LGBTQ plus and friends. Pride Club is a welcoming student-centered space for LGBTQ plus students and allies to connect, build community, and support one another. During RTI, students can participate in conversations and activities focused on belonging, respect, identity, celebrating diversity in a safe, inclusive environment. All students are welcome. What the hell does that have to do with math? RTA Pride Time, math in parentheses, and remember again what the definition of RTI was, aims to identify kids who are struggling in school, uses targeted teaching to help them catch up, and it measures progress to provide support for kids who need it. That definition of RTI seems wholly academic. So why do they have an RTI class that in parentheses says math, but then it's actually an LGBTQIA group? So this gets even crazier. So the mom reaches out to the assistant principal and was like, what is this? As any sane person would ask, what the hell is this? And how did my son get in it? Because my son says he didn't put himself in this LGBTQI parentheses math group, so he doesn't know what's going on. Like, did someone just assume my child is gay and say, put him or want him to be gay or something, and let's throw him in this RTI for math when it's really just about gender ideology? So this is the response the mom gets from the she, her assistant. And I like to read the pronouns for things like this. Yes, she, her, Brenda Gates, assistant to the principal. Says, your primary concern was regarding the RTI session titled LGBTQ in Friends, specifically that it is offered during the school day. I explained that this is not a class, but an RTI session, which takes place during fourth period. RTI is designed as a midday opportunity for students to receive academic support, such as making up work, getting extra help, or retaking assessments. 3 days per week, RTI sessions are reserved for core academic support priorities like math, science, ELA, and humanities. On the remaining days, certified and classified staff offer a variety of enrichment or interest-based sessions with generated by student leadership and student voice team suggestions. Examples include chess, art, Lego activities, board games, silent reading, and other interest-based groups. Students select their RTI session either on Sunday or during Monday morning advisory. LGBTQ plus and friends is one of those optional sessions. You shared your concern that this child was placed into the LGBTQ and friends session by a staff member rather than self-selecting. I explained that there is a way to identify how students are placed into sessions. And so they go on to say, we don't know, and they're going to meet, the mom's going to meet with the school today to figure out how the son got placed in this. But think of that for a second. So this is supposed to be a session to help with academics. 3 days a week, they do academics. And then the other 2 days a week, what do? Talk about gay stuff. Talk about gender ideology. That is insane. Why even have it during the day? And then you put kids in it who didn't even ask to go in it. So now kids are just going to be, you're deciding we're going to, what, radicalize them? We'll do math a couple days a week. And then the rest of the class will be about LGBTQ issues. Why is there even a place for that in school? Now, the study hall kind of thing I like. Tutoring, RTI, kids falling behind in math, reading, science, whatever it is. Yeah. We'll help your kids study 3 days a week. The other 2 days a week, we're going to indoctrinate them in radical gender ideology. How crazy is that? I've never heard of such a thing. I have never heard of such a thing. And frankly, I feel the same way about a chess day. And I love chess. I don't feel the same. The gender ideology thing is much more scary and weird and bizarre. But also, like, why would you have a portion of in the middle of the morning where 3 days a week your kid gets help with science and the rest of the time they play chess?
Or Legos. Like, you're just playing with Legos.
What are they, child? Are they 3 years old? That makes no sense at all. This is what our public dollars are paying for. And this is the WTEA trying to force parents, make it difficult to homeschool, make it difficult to school online, because they don't want your kids learning. They want your kids indoctrinated. They want your kids to be little puppets. absolutely crazy. So we'll have to follow up with that mom and see what she finds out about how her son even got into this weird thing. All right. Coming up next, our whistleblower testified in Olympia yesterday. We'll play a little bit of what she had to say. And when I say little bit, I do mean just a little bit. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for 3 years in a row. And they offer a variety of services, but this time of year, they get a lot of inquiries about attic insulation and feeling like people are losing a lot of heat out of their home, because up to 25% of your home's heat loss is through your attic. So if you don't have proper insulation, you need new insulation or a new roof, your furnace can be working overtime. So right now, when you bundle attic insulation with any new roof, and I think this is only going on for a couple more days at Valentine, you'll save an additional 10% off the entire project. So I would recommend, if that sounds like something you might be able to take advantage of, to call Valentine today to lock in your winter bundle savings. 206 Roofing. They'll give you a free estimate and tell them you heard about them on Undivided and I told you about your possible winter bundle savings. So 206 Roofing. All right. As I said, we were kind of covering this as it was happening yesterday. I'm really proud that in response to a report that we did on this show, although we're not journalists, right? In response to a report we did on this show in October, and we've had subsequent follow-ups, the whistleblower report on a state equity program becoming a fund for personal enrichment. And in that story, we exposed how a $250 million reparations fund was being used by BIPOC nonprofits to enrich themselves and their family members, buy themselves homes, pay off personal credit card debt, etc. So yesterday in the Senate Housing Committee, they heard two bills that were a direct response to that report. The first is Senate Bill 6205, and this is very common sense. This should already be the case. I'm shocked it's not. That no, if you get a state contract to dole out money to the community, you can't use the money on yourself, right? So our whistleblower, Corey Orbold, is scheduled to testify, and this just pissed me off. So we're watching this meeting. It starts at 10:30 a.m. They're wasting time on all sorts of nonsense. They've got some gubernatorial appointees that they need to hear from, and they're asking the dumbest questions about, like, oh, what have you learned? What are you doing all this? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we have public testimony to get to. So by the time they get to public testimony on these bills, like our whistleblower bills, they restricted everybody's testimony to 30 seconds. I've never seen that. I mean, maybe a couple times. 30 seconds. So Corey's down there and and they're real strict on it, right? So she's got 30 seconds to testify in favor of Senate Bill 6205.
So my name is Corey Orvold. I'm signing in pro for this. I, along with others, have had to console devastated community members who believe they had a real opportunity to homeownership through the community reinvestment program. Many were misled. Some lost their dream of owning a home. Others took on new debt, and some ultimately became homeless. It is clear these funds were disproportionately directed to clients of preferred professionals, nonprofit employees, and their family members, their close friends, and even their board members. Senate Bill 6205 seeks to prevent these conflicts of interest from happening in the future, and I urge you to vote pro.
Yeah, she's like, she had sent me, you know, what she was going to say, and it was, you know, a minute and a half is what the expectation was, and all of a sudden they just cut it down just like that, no warning, 30 seconds. So she also, though, got a chance to testify on Senate Bill 6167, which is a direct response to a different aspect of our story, where there were all of these examples of people with ties to, you know, the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle who were getting hundreds of thousands of dollars and double dipping in some of these programs. And we give the example, and that's what this bill is based off of, a woman named Asia Williams, whose mom worked for the Urban League, helping and dole out this money through the community reinvestment program. And she got a total of like $350,000 from various sources, including her mom's employer, to go towards the down payment on a $450,000 home, which is just crazy. She basically got a free house courtesy of the taxpayers as these nonprofits were turning away other community members. Now we have no money. Well, yeah, it's because you gave it all to this chick's daughter, right? And so that is, again, Senate Bill 6167. Our whistleblower, Corey Orvold, had another whopping 30 seconds to make the case on this one.
Oversight of taxpayer-funded down payment assistance is not only essential, it is absolutely necessary. Senate Bill 6167 is a critical remedy that would prevent one household from receiving $350,000 in taxpayer money, including covenant. It would prevent another household from receiving $336,000 in taxpayer money, including covenant. It would prohibit another household from receiving $250,000 towards a purchase of a $280,000 condo. One of the most appalling is it will prevent a $1 million home purchaser from receiving $373,000, including Covenant. I have this and other stories in this binder that I've gathered. I strongly encourage you to pass Senate Bill 6167. Thank you.
I love Corey, though. That's a tough chick. She did great. She didn't falter. And I mean, Corey's been waiting for that moment for a year. And this means a lot to her. And for this story, you know, that really, I think, took on a life of its own. And look, it's not about politics. I know everybody's making fraud so political. And oh, if the conservatives point it out, then we can't do anything about it, especially when it's BIPOC groups and it's a Brandy story and Brandy's mega racist. And so we can't. No, it's like if you actually cared about the program you put together and said, we want to help as many members of the Black community as possible, then why would you be in support of one person getting $350,000 while they turn other people away? Why would you ever be in support of that? I mean, I think the programs are racism. I don't think they should exist as they are. But you absolutely cannot have an environment where you're awarding state contracts for a specific purpose and they turn around and use that money on themselves. That cannot be acceptable. So I'm glad the Senate gave these hearings. I don't know whether they'll go anywhere. I guess we're going to track it and see. But if you actually care about fraud and helping people in the way that you said these programs were going to help people, these are no-brainers. All right, coming up next, quite the headline. Some calling this the scariest time since the Great Recession for Seattle as the tech industry sheds jobs. We'll discuss. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, I recommend reaching out. It's a huge decision, right? Reach out to a few real estate agents. See what they offer you and make one of them Wes Jones. And I promise you, when you come away at the end of the day, you'll be most impressed with what Wes Jones and his team have to offer because they deliver results in all sorts of markets. It's the reason Wes has been able to do this for such a long time. And he's weathered all the ups and downs of the housing market just fine. So Wes and his team at sellwithwes.com, I'd suggest you start by going to their website and using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then ask Wes for a free market analysis. Tell him that you heard about him on Undivided with me, Brandy Cruz, and he'll go through and kind of do an assessment of your home, how the market is in your area, and then he'll come up with a game plan. Ann says, truly a five-star experience with Wes from start to finish. Him and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. When it was time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open houses that felt like neighborhood events, and brought in 200-plus people. We got four offers and sold for $100,000 over asking. You won't find a better team. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really is a better way to sell your home. All right, this was quite the headline. And I saw it and I thought self-inflicted, which it is, but there's some more nuance to this, I'll acknowledge. So Cairo 7, quote, scariest time economically since the Great Recession. Layoffs hit struggling Seattle region. Okay. And this comes, of course, after the news broke, this from the Center Square, that Amazon is cutting another 16,000 jobs in the latest round of layoffs. This is how those cuts are characterized. So it says that these will be corporate employees globally as part of a multinational technology company's restructuring efforts to streamline operations and reduce bureaucracy. Amazon Senior Vice President of People Experience and Technology confirmed the layoffs in a message shared with staff, said that this is about strengthening our organization by reducing layers, increasing ownership, and removing bureaucracy. And then she goes on to say the reductions we are making today will impact approximately 16,000 roles across Amazon. And we're working hard to support everyone whose roles are impacted. So this, I think a lot of these are going to fall in Seattle where the HQ is because these are like corporate jobs. And so I'm sure there'll be some elsewhere, but it's going to be pretty significant. This comes after Expedia at the same time basically said it was going to cut staff this spring. They say they're going to lay off at their Seattle-based headquarters 162 employees, and those are all Washington employees. It says those layoffs are going to take place from April 1st through April 19th. They're going to impact employees at the company's Interbay headquarters, as well as several remote workers that are currently in Washington State. Not a surprise there. So there's a couple things that I want to be, I know it's easy for me to say, yeah, Seattle sucks. I wouldn't want people working here and the tax climate is awful. And that all is true. Now, there is a little nuance. Amazon totally overhired during the pandemic. That was a time everybody's at home. Maybe they had to overhire. So some of this is Amazon like right-sizing after the pandemic. And then there's AI. We're going to continue to see tech sector jobs go away because of artificial intelligence. And that's just a reality of the time that we're in this amazing world with all this tech. But when you're a company and you're looking to shed jobs, especially a company like Amazon that has the world is your oyster, you've got employees everywhere, you have the money to be able to really be wherever you want, When you're looking for places to cut, especially corporate jobs, why not cut them in a city that taxes you for high-paying jobs? The jumpstart tax in Seattle. So people whine, oh, pay people more, living wage. Amazon's like, okay, we'll create a bunch of good living wage jobs and a bunch of high-paying jobs. Oh, no, you don't. We're going to tax you for those high-paying jobs. It's the stupidest thing. And now there's a statewide proposal to do that, along with a proposed income tax. So it's getting less and less desirable to run any sort of business here. And Amazon has for years now been trying to move jobs elsewhere. They have not been growing their Seattle footprint. They're not going to grow their Seattle footprint. The other headline I saw out of Amazon the other day is that they're closing those Amazon Go stores, which I've never been in one of those. But aren't those the ones where you just walk in, it knows you're there, and then you walk out and it knows what you bought?
Right.
Which is so creepy. And I saw that and I said, I guarantee they're doing that because they always get vandalized and by the Antifa mobs and all this stuff. And like, it's too expensive here to have a brick and mortar. So they're just leaning into sort of the Whole Foods and food delivery. And
although it's like, there's one in Mill Creek that I've been to, and they're closing that one. I think they're closing all of them, not just Seattle locations.
No, that's what I said. They're closing all of it, right? Because you can do it, but people want it delivered and stuff. But also, people would always vandalize them in Seattle, so I don't want those either. They would always be like, let's go to the Amazon Go store and break the windows,
which is so crazy. I just think
they
don't have enough, too. They just had basics.
So. Yeah. So here's a quote, though, I want to read you about this situation from that Cairo 7 story that said, scariest time economically since the Great Recession. And only going to get worse, by the way. So Joe Wynn, who was a former state senator, one of the most progressive members of the Democratic caucus, was pro tax, 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 tax. Well, remember, he got hired as the director of commerce under Governor Ferguson. Well, he's already left. He left to take a job as, hold your breath, the president and CEO of the Seattle Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. So Joe Wynn, who used to be, frankly, he'll probably contest this with me, and I like Joe Wynn. We are weird friends. I think that he contributed to the environment that's been bad for business as a state lawmaker. I really do. And then he got to see how the sausage was made in Olympia as the head of commerce and was like, ew. And now he's working for the Seattle Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce as the CEO, and he said this, I'm very nervous about what's happening. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. We're competing globally, and we don't have an environment right now where I think the political community and the business community are working very well together. Well, you don't say. I like to think I've rubbed off on Joe Wynn a little bit. I'm seeing a Joe Wynn red pilling here. And that's true. First of all, the business community has been trying to work well with the city. It's the politicians who don't want to work with the business community, despite the fact that they fund their every whim through taxation. And so, yeah, you can't, and hopefully this is Joe realizing, like, we can't have these things that we think we want the government to do without a robust tax base. And that includes companies like Amazon and all the other businesses who are the economic engine of our state. But they just continue to raise B&O taxes. Now they're going to do the income tax, which will hurt small businesses and small business owners pretty profoundly. And then we'll have capital flight out of the state of Washington. And with capital flight comes deficits, and then they're going to put all of it on us. So when I see that headline, scariest time economically since the Great Recession in Seattle, yeah, and it's only going to get worse. No businesses, trust me, at the end of Ferguson's first term, we will have lost far more businesses than have started here. And I would be surprised if the number of new businesses exceeds even 1,000. Because who in their right mind would choose Washington State right now to start a business? That makes no sense. So things are going to get much worse before they get better. All right. We'll got a double dose of unbelievable coming up next with some things happening in Olympia. First, are we in a tech bubble? You know, we talk about what's happening with tech and AI and all of that. How might that impact your retirement portfolio? Are you worried about it? Well, our friend Zach Abraham today, not too late to sign up. He's having a New Year Reset live webinar at 3:30 p.m. You can sign up for it right now, totally free, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. During it, Zach's going to discuss the impact AI could have on the market this year, how Bulwark is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios, plus, of course, a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So do a few things at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Sign up for today's free New Year Reset live webinar. You can also subscribe to Zach's daily market recap to keep you up to date right to your inbox. And you can schedule your own personalized Know Your Risk portfolio review, all again at knowyourriskpodcast.com. 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 All right. In our segment, Unbelievable, of all the things, all the priorities, Democrats in Olympia are trying to start an abortion savings account. Let's get to it. Okay, so you guys know I'm pro-choice, up to fetal viability, which I know you guys just give me hell about all the time, but I don't foresee that necessarily changing. But who knows? I've been red-pilled in other areas, so it is quite possible. But I don't believe that anyone should be forced to pay for abortions. And I don't believe taxpayers should have to pay for abortions. I don't believe health care providers should, health insurers should have to cover or pay for abortions. I believe it's sort of the free market. And, you know, with the Planned Parenthoods of the world, I believe that there's enough people who are pro-choice that if they choose to donate their money so low-income women can afford to have abortions, then you can donate that privately. I don't believe there needs to be any sort of taxes to cover the cost of abortion or any sort of taxpayer-funded abortion anything. Well, Democrats in Olympia disagree. Senate Bill 6182 would create an abortion fund, abortion savings account, basically, to help people abort their unborn children. And they would do this through a tax on health insurance companies or insurers, which, again, I think is a kind of weird way to go about it. I'll describe that more in a moment. I mean, I think the whole thing is stupid, virtue signaling. But it says the abortion savings program is established with this bill. The purpose of the program is to provide grants to maintain access to direct patient abortion clinical care services for individuals in the state. And then it says, in addition to any other taxes or other charges imposed under this chapter, each health care carrier is subject to a tax. And it will amount to 82 cents per coverage month that they hold in the prior calendar year. So I don't know eventually or ultimately how much that will cost these healthcare insurers and all of these things, but the weird line is this to me. This assessment required under this section must be borne solely by the health carrier and may not be passed through to enrollees in premiums, rates, plan design, or otherwise. So they're trying to legislate that these health insurers just have to eat that cost. You just have to eat it. It's just got to be another cost on your balance sheets to contribute to this abortion savings account. And you can't pass that cost along to anyone else. How are you going to make sure that doesn't happen? They think that they'll find a way. They're not going to just eat that cost. And that's what, like, these lawmakers are so dumb. It's like, oh, you can't pass it around to enrollees in premiums, rates, plan design, or otherwise. How are you going to prove it if they do? They'll just increase the cost for something else and they'll never know. So yeah, and at this time where you're screaming about the cost of healthcare and all this stuff at the national level, it's like, well, you're doing things like this that are gonna make healthcare more expensive. And now all these people are gonna be penalized for your abortion savings account. All these people who are never gonna get abortions and never have had an abortion are gonna be basically socialized out and have to pay for other people's abortions because their premiums are gonna be higher. It's the stupidest stuff. All right, let's do an edition, long overdue edition of The Seattle Times is Trash. Trash. Okay, so we all know, and it does seem like everybody's in agreement, that we have a serious crisis in the state of Washington with children dying who are under the care of the Department of Social and Health Services, or the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, rather. And the number of critical incidents since 2021 has just skyrocketed, tied specifically to overdoses. Fatal and non-fatal overdoses. And we know last year, I mean, the numbers were just startling when you look at it compared to 2020, 2021, et cetera. And so you've got in 2025, which we only had the numbers for Q1 through Q3, there was 15 kids who were killed, 30 who were almost killed. And think about that. That's not among all kids in the state. That's just the ones that DCYF had some sort of involvement with. Like they're in a, you know, monitoring their placement and their parents or whatever it is. So that's a lot of kids. And the number has gone up significantly. So people with common sense are trying to figure out in Olympia, how do we help with this? How do we fix this? One of the bills that got bipartisan support last week, which I was very grateful for, including Attorney General Nick Brown that supported it, was the bill that basically said, hey, we need to treat fentanyl the same as meth. If you expose your child, to it in a different, if you expose your child to fentanyl versus if you expose your child to meth, those two things have to be treated the same way. So that was a bill that happened last week that I think will get passed given its bipartisan support. And then there's this bill, House Bill 1092, which is a bill pushed by our friend Travis Couture. And it does have bipartisan co-sponsors. I see Representative Mari Levitt there. This is in response to the Keeping Families Together Act. We've talked about it a lot. That act is what led to that spike you saw in the numbers of kids dying. The Keeping Families Together Act basically took out the language that it's considered imminent harm if you're using a deadly drug like fentanyl around children, because they're like, we got to keep families together. We'll rip families apart when it comes to radical gender ideology with no signs of abuse, but we'll keep families together if you're using fentanyl around your kids. So what this does is it gets rid of this, or it puts back in this imminent harm language and says, yes, it is imminent harm if you use fentanyl around your child or any drug aside from prescription or weed. And then it says it's not enough just to promise to secure your drugs, because remember the response to this uptick in deaths from the Department of Children, Youth, and Families is, oh, we won't take the kids away, but we'll give parents lock boxes. We'll give the parents lock boxes to lock up their fentanyl, as if they'll remember to do that. So this bill says that's not going to do it. And then it says if a child is taken because of this imminent harm language, the parent has to prove they've been sober for 6 months in order to regain custody. All of that I think is fair. Small price to pay to save kids' lives, don't you think? Not according to the Seattle Times, which put out this doozy of an op-ed from the editorial board. Harsh drug laws won't help kids. More oversight for parents will. Wow, interesting. Harsh drug laws won't help kids. I'm sure the kids who've died from drug abuse in the home would disagree that this probably would have helped them. Let's listen to the stunning rationale at the by the folks at the Seattle Times editorial board. And there's so much smugness in this, it's dripping. It says, for the first time in recent memory, the question of protecting children in struggling families has gained enough urgency to be more than a point of debate between bureaucratic insiders, acting like nobody's ever cared this much about protecting kids in struggling families. Okay. That's because well over 100 kids have died in the past 2 years or suffered near-fatal injuries while living in homes known to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So they're acknowledging it in this story. Like, this has been, kids are dying at record levels. The outcry grows louder each month the Keeping Families Together Act is in effect. The 2021 law, designed to send fewer children into foster care, achieved that worthy aim. Foster care has shrunk by a third. But the act, which keeps more kids at home while nudging their parents toward drug treatment and mental health services, was controversial from the start. So it's says, this makes no sense. They contradict themselves all over this story, but let's just keep reading. Skeptics doubted that parents in addiction would follow through with these voluntary programs. Those fears have been borne out. About 68% of families where a child died or nearly died had previously refused services, according to DCYF. In response to this grim trend, Representative Travis Couture is floating a draconian bill that would make parental possession of any Schedule 1 or 2 drugs, such as LSD, ecstasy, cocaine, oxycodone, heroin, meth, or fentanyl, reasonable grounds for petitioning courts to remove the child. So just so we're all caught up here, they're agreeing that children are dying. They're agreeing that the Keeping Families Together Act is part of that, that that's when we saw this uptick in children dying. And they're also agreeing that a key element of the Keeping Families Together Act, which said, yeah, you got fentanyl in your home, but we'll try to get you into some sort of treatment. They also acknowledge that that's not working because 68% of instances where a kid died, there was evidence that the parents didn't abide by any sort of voluntary programs or they refused services altogether. So the Seattle Times is admitting there's all these problems, but they say Representative Couture's bill, which is bipartisan, is a draconian way to fix it. Interesting. Let's read why, shall we? If Couture's law passes as written, it will trigger a massive influx into foster care, which would be costly in multiple ways on top of the $12 million per biennium price tag. Consider the enormous number of foster children who wind up homeless or incarcerated. So one of their arguments for why, yeah, kids are dying, but it might cost a lot of money to help them. Is that really the stance they're taking?
Homeless anyway.
And they'll just end up homeless anyway. Jail. I'd rather they be homeless than dead.
Right.
I'd rather they be homeless than dead. I'd rather they be incarcerated than dead. But you're saying that those are the only two options? And you're saying that, oh, we can't throw money at saving kids' lives? That's actually the Seattle Times' position on this. They said it's ironic to have an avowed conservative, referring to Travis Couture, advocating for more government intrusion into families' lives. The audacity. They're saying that this is a conservative saying we need government intrusion into people's lives. From the same newspaper that won't get on board and push aggressively to restore parental rights and education, that's fine with government overreach in every other aspect of our lives, but not when kids are dying from fentanyl. Is this the dumbest op-ed the Seattle Times has ever written? They say, and there is a better way, helping families before they ever see dependency court. They say Adam Ballout, a public defender in Everett, has been doing that for the last 7 years, and he reports an astonishing success. Couture's bill may sound cleaner and clearer, but it is likely to be a lot more costly in the long run. Here's an idea. Let's do both. I totally agree with you. The best thing for everyone is to help these people before they ever are in a dependency court, is to make sure that people don't get addicted to drugs, is to make sure they don't have drug-addicted babies, is to make sure they're not abusing fentanyl in the home around kids. Who disagrees? Nobody's saying not to do that. Nobody is saying don't help them one bit until their kid dies. Don't help them one bit until they're caught using fentanyl around their kid, and then we'll just take their kid away. Who's saying that? Nobody is saying that. Let's do it all. Let's try to prevent. Best use of funds. But let's not just say there shouldn't be any backstop for when the worst case scenario happens, because you're never going to eliminate that entirely. So yeah, let's do everything we can to prevent it. But if it does happen, that kid needs to be out of the home. What the hell is wrong with the Seattle Times editorial board? This is one of, it's like they couldn't think of anything to write today. So they're like, I don't know, let's do one on how we should just let parents kill their kids so we can take a shot at a conservative and call it draconian and say all these smug things about a conservative because our readers will eat that up. One of the people in Olympia who's doing the most to protect children. Let's write an op-ed taking shots at him for a bill that, by the way, has bipartisan support. Seattle Times editorial board, I say it all the time. My goal in life, and I might retire if it happens, is for the Seattle Times to go bankrupt because it would be the best damn thing that could ever happen to the state of Washington. Because why? The Seattle Times is trash. All right, we'll get to national news. A little appearance from Nicki Minaj at the White House, which just tickles me. It's just funny. Nicki Minaj holding hands with President Trump with her long nails and his old hand and her like 4-inch nails. I was like, what a timeline we're living in. I keep telling you guys to take the First Mark Challenge and become a member of the First Mark family, like me and my family, our business, Nicole, and Debbie S. Debbie says First Mark is the absolute best. She says we're 70 years old. We got all these things, cars, boat, house, ATVs. We don't want to shop insurance. That's annoying. So she said it's one-stop shopping with First Mark. Excellent rates and coverage. Anytime we've had a question or had to make a change, it was addressed and dealt with immediately. So comforting having them in our corner. Connie says, I'm very impressed with First Mark. I learned about them from Brandy, and I was looking for a different car insurance company, so I made the call. I received an email from Chase, and he was able to save me a considerable amount on my car insurance. He was very easy to work with. No high-pressure sales, ever. I would recommend First Mark to my friends and family. In fact, I already have. Love it. Join the First Mark family today. It all starts by taking the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is what? They work for you, not the insurance companies. All right. So I love this. Trump accounts for kids. I don't see what's controversial about this. But of course, people are just, oh, he called it a Trump account. That man's ego. We know he has an ego. Okay, let's move past it if he's going to do good things for people. And you have all these companies that are coming out and saying that they're going to match for or even just donate proactively, which was the case with the Dell family. But a lot of companies are going to match the $1,000 that the government puts in or match the match from them. So like if families can match the Trump account. So if they do that, a lot of their employers are saying, well, we'll match what you give to the Trump account. So you're really starting these kids off on a great. Some of these kids at 1 year old are going to have more money in their bank account than some adults do. I mean, it's going to be very good for them of like $3,000 just like that. So President Trump named some of the latest companies and people to get on board.
Delighted to report that dozens of major employers have signed up to add the Trump account contributions to their employee benefit packages, including Uber, Schwab, Charter Communications, and many, many others. And just today it was announced that Intel, NVIDIA, Broadcom, IBM, Steak and Shake, Coinbase, Continental Resources and Comcast have all signed up for really big contributions.
I love that. Trump does this better than anyone else. I talk about this all the time with his ability to treat these players the way they want to be treated and to get things out of them for free. As opposed to, oh, big evil, we're going to force you to give, give, give. We're just going to take, and screw you over in return. The example I always use when we're looking at the size of government, right, is, you know, Democrats don't want to at all try to cooperate and coexist with the private sector. They want to control the private sector. But I always use this example of the money that was being spent. It was a line item in the budget to help immigrant kids learn how to play hockey, right? I was like, okay, I like hockey. That's cool. People come here from other countries, you know, introduce them to a sport that they might fall in love with. And that's kind of a healthy way to keep them out of, you know, whatever trouble they might get in. But why does the government have to pay for it? If I wanted to do that program, I would make one call to who? The Kraken. I would make one call to the Kraken, which is owned by a bunch of millionaires. And I would say, hey, we want to start this program that teaches immigrant kids how to play hockey. We need like 50 grand. You would have a check that day. But no, the Democrats are like, let's just have taxpayers pay for that too. Trump gets it that, hey, if you give them an opportunity, these companies, to sort of shine and to be good corporate citizens, they would much rather do that than have money taken out of their pockets. So he's just brilliant in that regard. Fox talked about the potential value that these Trump accounts could have over time.
By age 18, right, you could have $303,000. By age 28, it's more than a million.
Jeez,
if you do the maximum contributions, if you give no contributions, right, you're still shy of $6,000, which ain't nothing, and then $18,000 by age 28.
That's awesome. What a cool thing. If Democrats had thought about this, MSNBC, everyone at the time, they'd be fawning over it. Oh my gosh, setting up kids for a good financial future. But it's Trump, and he called it the Trump accounts. They just lose their minds. So Nicki Minaj was also at this summit, the Treasury Department's Trump accounts summit. And it was so funny because she's just in the audience, right? And I think he did this to Kevin O'Leary as well, like the Shark Tank guy. So he just calls Nicki Minaj up, and her jacket was just cracking me up because she looks like a little chicken. But then the podium, because Trump's so tall, it's just right in her face. But she just said this.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I don't know what to say, but I will say that I am probably the president's number one fan. And that's not going to change. And the hate or what people have to say, it does not affect me at all. It actually motivates me to support him more. And it's gonna motivate all of us to support him more. We're not going to let them get away with bullying him and, you know, the smear campaigns. It's not going to work, okay? He has a lot of force behind him, and God is protecting him. Amen.
And then she's like, do I leave? It was just funny. How can you not be entertained by this, right? Now, here's something interesting that I ask you guys about in our daily show poll, which we'll play in a little bit, or which we'll go through in a little bit. So Nicki Minaj immigrated to the U.S. from Trinidad and Tobago when she was 5 years old, and she'd said publicly she hadn't completed her citizenship process yet. Well, Trump apparently gave her a Trump gold card for free. So remember, these are the things where you pay $1 million, or I thought he increased it to $5 million. It could have been, it's either $1 million or $5 million. Maybe I got it wrong in our show poll, because I thought maybe it used to be $1 million. Maybe it's $5 million now, in order to pay to basically become a citizen of the United States. And she says that she got it for free. She says the COPE is coming, finalizing that citizenship paperwork as we speak, as per my wonderful, gracious, charming president. And then she says, gold Trump card free of charge. So I'll ask you, and we'll hear your thoughts in the Daily Subscriber Show Poll. Is it fair that Nicki got one for free for just being a fan of the president? We'll discuss then. But first, it is Thursday after all. We're going through a legislative session here, a lot of insanity. It's why we do Florida Report, so we can compare it to a much different state and see what's happening there. So let's get to our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Hi. We have to talk about this nurse. And people are like, free speech, free speech. They'll have already seen this on the internet, but let's play this unhinged nurse for everyone.
As a labor and delivery nurse, it gives me great joy to wish Caroline Leavitt a fourth degree tear. I hope that you f***ing rip from, bow to stern, and never shit normally again, you c***.
Oh my goodness. That is genuinely disgusting. Labor and delivery nurse, I hope you rip from bow to stern to Caroline Leavitt, who's about to have a baby.
That's not even something that a crappy person says to a person, let alone a labor and delivery nurse would say to somebody publicly on the internet for it to live forever. I can't imagine the level of, I don't know, mental illness you have to have to think that that's okay.
No, and that nothing will happen to you because she, I mean, and also to say that when you live in the state of Florida, like it's just not going to go well for you. So she loses her job, which is perfectly appropriate. Who would want that person caring for them when they're delivering one of the most serious medical things a woman will ever go through in her life? But then the attorney general of the state of Florida also taking action.
Yeah, he made sure that her license, her nursing license was pulled, and she's not going to be able to practice nursing at all in the state of Florida and hopefully nowhere else in the country. Because even if I agreed with her, I wouldn't want her to be my nurse.
No, and it's a do no harm thing. And there is free speech, but then there's speech that goes across a line where they're giving you a license to, you know, practice medicine or whatever it is. I don't believe that there's any free speech argument in a circumstance like this. People can feel free to disagree with us and drop some thoughts in the comments. But there was also that nurse, gosh, on the East Coast somewhere, I can't remember the state, video going around where she's encouraging people, if they have, you know, ICE agents in their presence or whatever, and their nurses, to like slip paralytics in there, or, you know, to give them diarrhea. And it's like, you're telling people to paralyze ICE agents? Obviously, she loses her job. I can't imagine turning on my camera and thinking, well, I can't imagine doing any of that because I have, I'm mentally stable for the most part. I just can't imagine and thinking that there wouldn't be repercussions for that.
Yeah, I'm on your show, my sister and you and I bantering, and I still am careful about what I say because at the end of the day, like, it's just, you have your inner monologue and then you have the filter that allows what comes out to come out. And for her, somebody to say, and then not only that, I saw a video where she doubled down and on a response video saying that she's on the right side of this. And I just...
Nope, you're not. You have a mental illness. And I saw photos of her with her husband. I'm like, can you imagine being married to someone like that? He must not be a winner either. Anyway, all right. So we have some things that really spotlight why we do this segment to compare the difference between a state like Washington and a state like Florida. One of them is around school choice. We had two stories this week where they're trying to make it difficult to homeschool your kids. They're trying to make it difficult to send your kids to online schools. Meanwhile, Florida becomes the latest state to buy into President Trump's National Education Freedom Tax Credit Program.
Yep, we, our education commissioner had done a press conference on this, talking about the benefits of opting in, bragging even more about how Florida's just got probably some of the best options for parents when it comes to school choice. And I thought it was funny because all this happened, you know, it's National School Choice Week. I think it ended a couple of days ago. So I was kind of cracking up that you guys were going through something so opposite during National School Choice Week.
Yeah, and for people who maybe aren't familiar with this, there's actually been a lot of states, there's kind of a timeline for them to opt in or opt out. And it's mostly red states, but like the governor of Colorado opted in, Jared Polis, who's a Democrat, and he said, why would I not? This is creating a tax credit for families to be able to send their kid to the school setting that best suits them. And so I was so happy to hear Colorado's governor, who's more reasonable, right, decide that this is about more choices for kids is better. The only states that don't think that are states run by the teachers' unions, where they're like, no, we can't give kids choices because we've given them choices. They're definitely not going to pick our public schools. So it's great to see a mix of, I mean, it's not a surprise Florida's doing it. I think they had to analyze it. But Washington, I imagine, will not be opting in.
No, probably not. It just seems like a no-brainer, but I guess in this day and age, it's not.
Crazy. All right. So another story that creates quite the juxtaposition. So right now in Washington State, they're pushing a bill to try to lower punishments for child sex predators. Yes, that's what happens in Washington State. As we know, in Florida, you can get the death penalty for, you know, hurting a child, sexually assaulting a child. And Ron DeSantis gave an example of why they do this.
Yeah, so basically we have a case that's going on right now of a man who committed in heinous acts against a child. And so he's already facing the death penalty based off of the crimes he's committed of. And just to make sure that that sticks, our AG tacked on another 47 additional charges to this man, just to make sure that he never sees the light of day. And also, like, hopefully makes good on our law that came into effect in 2023 that pedophiles can face the death penalty for their crimes.
Yeah, and what did Ron DeSantis say about this?
He put out a tweet that just said, this is exactly why we have the death penalty for pedophiles in the state of Florida.
For people like this, yes.
For people like this.
Florida putting them to death. Washington State trying to get them out of prison early. Great job, everyone. Great job. All right, Miranda, good stuff. Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Wow. Appreciate Miranda filling us in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. Coming up next, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll and comments from the live stream. But first, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington today. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. They can help you navigate the complex world of rules and regulations at the local, county, and state level to make sure that you know what's coming down the pipe or what already has, like rent control, and how you can make sure you follow all the rules and fight back against the dumb ones, because RHA is always down in Olympia trying to fight against bad housing policy. So become a member today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, a real doozy in our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys if you think it's fair that President Trump gave Nicki Minaj a free gold card. Someone on X, Reagan, told me, Brandy, I don't care. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Is it fair that the president gave Nicki Minaj a free gold card? Nicole, yes or no?
I'm going to say I'm cool with it.
Okay.
Because I just think she has done a lot for him. She's put herself out there and she's spoken out about things that most celebrities are not. And yeah, no, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, but like, should anyone who's nice to the president get a get citizenship?
Well,
what if it's it were Biden handing out a free gold card to Hassan Piker? Would you be like, yeah, I'm cool with it? Probably not.
Well, no, I think it depends on the person, definitely. But I think she's proven herself.
Jimmy Kimmel, Biden be like, here's a free gold card. He's already a citizen, I guess. So I think I'm naming off already citizens.
But I think it's a good story. She came here illegal, but her mom earned citizenship and. And yeah, I don't know.
I say cool. No, absolutely not.
I mean, the Trump card was his design anyway. It was an executive order. So, I mean, it's up to him.
But previous presidents did something similar. It just wasn't called the Trump card. I'm not sure how much it actually cost. I'd have to look into that. But
I don't know.
75% of you saying are no, it's not fair that she got it for free. Van said, no, I don't think U.S. citizenship should be for sale for any price. There are several routes to legal citizenship, including service in the armed forces. And that's, you know, a good point. Like, you're just against the idea of you can purchase
citizenship
for a price.
Like, you have to pay for things anyway to get your citizenship.
Yeah,
right?
But it's not $1 million.
Right.
Yeah. Sherry said, wait, so she gets a free gold card worth $1 million, and then she donates somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000 toward the newborn baby accounts. So yeah, it's a little trade, right? I mean, it really is. She gave some money toward the Trump accounts, and then in return, she got a gold card worth much more.
I also think that $1 million is just a number assigned to it, right? It could be any amount that Trump designed, so he can say it's free, I give it to you. I mean, the number is just a number.
Yeah, I don't know. Jack said, hopefully not a quid pro quo situation. Well, I don't know if it's that kind of quid pro quo, if you know what I say. Anna, this affects me how? Listen, I know it's a fun one, okay, Anna? Come on, man. But also, it is interesting. Like, we're talking about immigration and cracking down on immigration and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, but I'll give a free truck. I mean, there's people who, in fairness, there are people who've been going about it the right way to get their citizenship for 10 to 20 years. And because they're not a rapper who's been publicly nice to the president, they got to continue to go through it.
Well,
come on. It's not fair.
You could say the same thing about Democrats giving illegals anything.
Yeah.
I mean, they give them all sorts of stuff that are taxpayer funded.
Oh, I agree. And that's not fair. So just trying to be consistent. Fair. Wow, you guys really hated my poll today. Junie said, I voted no, but on the list of things I care about, this is at the bottom of the pile. God forbid a girl wants to have a little fun during the show. God forbid. All right, comments from the live stream on the state disappearing kids, Bill Biz. Have you noticed how often gender-affirming care is described as evidence-based? It's an amazing fallacy. I agree. It's
always
not evidence-based.
If you're a child, would you rather have a live daughter or a dead son or whatever?
Oh, my God. Give me a break. Milkman, actually disappearing, not getting deported. Okay. actual disappearing, not getting deported. Yes, because the left calls that kidnapping kids.
Right.
And say, no, they had to go home. Lucas, the mom posted this story on a Between Parents Facebook group and was shut down by the moderators. Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh,
I hadn't
she didn't
heard
tell
that.
Me that.
No. Delaney, living in a state that makes you pay for people's children to be kidnapped is wild. I agree. Robert Von Darth, it is a psyop to promote the ideas that Washington is not fixable and conservatives should just leave. They are instilling hopelessness into their political opposition. Mm-hmm. I shall not get hopeless. I shall not be deterred. Little Miss J, Brandy, there's thousands of these organizations across the United States. It isn't just here. I witnessed two organizations that were funding groups and two from Canada, too. Oh, I'm sure. They're all over the place. But our state gives these people a lot of money.
Sure do.
Let's see here. Stephanie, on our story about this weird class that mixed LGBTQ agenda with math, kids are failing and our test scores are in the toilet. But please go ahead. Push this crap. On our whistleblower given 30 seconds to testify in Olympia, Alice Marie, 30 seconds for testimony equals we don't want to hear from you, but they said that we have to. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
Really quick on our exclusive story about the LGBTQ class.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, I mean, that's based on sexual identity.
Yeah.
And that's middle school students where if you get placed in sex ed, you have to tell the parents they have to opt out or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this class, they just slide in there and there's no opt out. There's no notification.
Yep. And what do you think they talk about?
Than they talk about in sex ed, I'm sure. But anyway, I'm very disturbed by that story. I think it's wild that they're placing that so it's disguised by math help.
Oh, I agree. It's horrible. Anyway. Dems wanting to tax or wanting to fund an abortion savings account. Dawn, they can get $5 billion rounded up for Kamala's campaign, but can't do the same for any program that they claim to care about. Yeah, that's what I'm saying is if you really want to provide abortions, then pay for it. Solicit donations. Mm-hmm. Seattle Times is trash. Street Psych says, war on drugs never worked. We have more drugs than ever. We need to take responsibility for our communities and not rely on the government.
They don't want it to work.
Well, when the government gets involved, they just make things worse intentionally to keep money coming in.
They want people to do drugs.
Yeah. We'll do one more here. Sasho Windfeather, I firmly believe we are in a branch timeline that was created by the death of Harambe. Harambe's death sent the internet into a frenzy that we never quite recovered from. And I should post this too. I already did one from Little Miss J, but I'll read this one too because it said, we wanted to give Miranda some love. Our best to your sister. Thank you. Yeah, she's working hard. She's doing her thing. Mm-hmm. Reading through all your comments to pick out the best of the best. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. As you know, President Trump handed off the situation in Minneapolis to Tom Homan. And I have to applaud him for the tone that he's taken. First, he has already been able to get results. He somehow has gotten the attorney general there to agree to help ICE with transfers from jails and prisons.
I had a very good meeting with Attorney General Ellison. And he has clarified for me that county jails may notify ICE of the release dates of criminal public safety risks so ICE can take custody of them upon the release from the jail. And let me tell you why that's important. Give us access to the illegal alien public safety threat and the safety and security of a jail. It's common sense. It's safer for the community. It's safer for the agent. And they're safer for the alien. Because anything can happen on a street arrest. It just makes common sense. And for the people that argue, well, we're a welcoming community because we want victims and witnesses of crime that are here illegally to feel safe to come to police without fear they're working with ICE. We're not going to talk to the victim witness of crime. There's no problem there. They should feel safe to come to police and ask for help. All we want is to talk to the person that local and state law enforcement authorities locked in a jail cell.
Yeah, and that's the safest way to do it. And it sounds like the Attorney General of Minnesota is on board with that. So that's big. But I want to end with this on the sanity check front. I think, again, Homan is taking the exact right approach. And he says, look, we want to come here and work with people. I'm not here for photo ops.
In my meetings with folks so far, and most importantly, the governor and the AG, the Mayor Fry, we didn't agree on everything. I didn't expect to agree on anything. I've heard many people want to know why we're talking to people who they don't consider friends in administration. Bottom line is you can't fix problems if you don't have discussions. I didn't come to Minnesota for photo ops or headlines. You haven't seen me. I came here to seek solutions, and that's what we're going to do. And we've come a long way, and we got some good wins for the people of Minnesota, I think, and for the administration, and for the safety security of this city.
Amen. We should all celebrate that. Take a deep breath and just calm the hell down. Work together to make our communities more safe. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. For subscribers, we will see you on Sunday. We have an awesome guest. Nicole, can I tease our guest? Is that allowed? Hyman is joining us. So again, from yelling at a guy in the locker room in L.A. to becoming a national voice on protecting girls' sports and spaces, because she's going to be at the rally on Tuesday, and so we're going to have her on to talk about. She also got a rap career. That was what she kind of was doing before all this blew up. So I think she's just an interesting
running for governor.
Yes, I'm all of it. Love it. So we're going to have her on. So subscribers, we will see you on Sunday. There'll also be a new episode of Politics Unpacked coming out tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, the rest of you, if you're not a subscriber, shame on you. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, shop our merch store while you're there, and we'll see non-subscribers on Monday. The rest of you, we'll see you on Sunday. And we'll see all of you at the rally on Tuesday on the steps of the state capitol.